This is Julie.
Hey, calendar, what's my morning like?
Julie's about to have a long day.
At 9 a.m., soccer carpool. 9:10, purchase birthday card. 9:05, dry cleaning.
Did you just go backwards?
I'm sorry, I can't fit that question into your schedule. 9:15, cry for a little bit.
For days that won't end, let Schwann's help. With Schwann's, you can get delicious meals that go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. Visit today at Schwann's.com.
Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist of billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Elevating Beyond, where we're always sharing the story behind the story of overcoming adversity to achieve significant success. I am here today with the one and only Ken Coleman, who actually, by the way, his book I have right here, for all of you that can't see it on camera, The Proximity Principle, The Proven Strategy That Will Lead to the Career You Love. And I have a signed copy he sent to me. I was able to listen to it. But I saw a recent post on your Twitter, someone else shared, I believe you hit number one on the Wall Street bestsellers list, right?
Right. Yeah. Week one. So that was a tremendous accomplishment from the team. You know, we have an amazing team here at Ramsey Solutions and a massive platform. So it was a rewarding thing, something we didn't expect, but we're so grateful for, and a real testament to teamwork.
I love it. I love it. And of course, and then I saw, okay, well, Ken is the host of Entree Leadership, and I'll share a little backstory of that as to how actually the proximity principle is literally how we're both sitting here today as we get more into that, but also host of the phenomenal Ken Coleman Show. And then I was doing some research just before this, and I saw something else pop up that it just recently got syndicated on FM and AM. Is that nationwide now?
Yeah, so we're 21 stations and growing, and we just launched yesterday, actually, as we do this conversation today. So excited about that, to continue to see that grow. And obviously, we want to be all around the country because we want to bring as much hope and clarity to people as possible so they can be what they're created to be. So just exciting time for the team here.
I love it. I love it. I've been seeing you out there grinding on the book tour. Excuse me. I know what it's like. It's so much more work than people will ever imagine. And that's what I like about your book too. And just to backtrack with the whole Entree Leadership thing, I tend to get caught up on the shiny objects and stuff. So getting myself back on point here. How I connected, why I'm on here with Ken right now is actually connected with the Entree Leadership team through Dave Ramsey. It was about 7 years ago when they were first starting. And as a business owner, I have a company. We now serve over 55 individuals with special needs. I have over 20 team members. But at that time, I had about six or seven. And I hadn't followed Dave Ramsey that much, and I was stuck in my leadership at that growth point. And I remember I just Googled like business owners that know stuff about leadership, and Entree Leadership popped up. And I read that book, and for the first time, I'm like, oh my gosh, this, I can relate to, this is written by a real business owner. Like I'm going through right now, needing to fire my first person and all that. Then I hadn't been into podcasting. I started hearing the Entree Leadership podcast. I went to a live event. I think it was like the 3-day event that they had at the time. And that was the biggest investment I had ever made at that time as a business owner. I remember my sister, we were partners at that time. I have full ownership now, but we left on great terms. Actually, Chris Hogan and I talked about that. But she was like, you're gonna invest like $4,000 to go to this? Like, no way. And so I remember I had to talk her into we had to have the whole deck stained around our property. It was like a $3,000 job. And I'm like, I'm going to do the whole thing myself, earn the money to go, so it's not coming out of our pocket as like co-owners. And I went to that event, and like this, like we get more into, and we'll get way more into the proximity principle, but that was the first time that I started to get around like other business owners, not just within my field, but that were really leading at a whole other level, that like cared deeply about their team, but that were winning. And then the crazy part was I had already implemented a lot of things into my company, like the no gossip policy and stuff like that. So I found people at that event coming to me for advice. And I was like, wow, if this lady that owns like this $15 million oil company is actually asking me advice, I must have something to teach. Like, I never thought that I did. And then when I saw Chris Hogan and everyone on stage, I just started falling in love with leadership at a whole other level. And then Ken took over as host of Entree Leadership Podcast. I think, what was that, in 2014, right? I believe. Mm-hmm. And I always was a fan of the show, but then that's how I got connected with listening to Ken Coleman as host of Entree Leadership Podcast. And from implementing everything he talks about, everything they do on the Entree Leadership team, everything throughout this book, The Proximity Principle, I can say with proof that my company, we had the lowest turnover rate in our entire state of Ohio in our field. The average in our field is something, it's really high. It's like 82%. We had an 11% turnover rate in 2018. Which is like the lowest that they've ever had here. And it's because of the leadership and the culture and literally applying like what I have learned through you guys. So I just, first of all, I just want to say thank you for everything that all of you are doing. It's been life changing.
That's why we do it.
So Ken, with the proximity principle, what I love about this is we talked about your amazing bio, where you are now. And I always say bios don't show battle scars. And you share like where your journey started without getting into the whole thing. People have to read the book. But before your show is syndicated and all over the nation, AM, FM radio, you were in like you described like a 5 by 5 foot. I almost imagine like the cellar of like a warehouse of that movie Office Space.
Yeah, it was like a small closet. It's where we started out.
And a lot of people never see that side of the story. So can you just kind of share with everyone like how you got there and you know, sort of the summarized version of how you applied the proximity principle to get to where you are?
Yeah, it's an example that I share in the book of just kind of getting started and what is it like to get started, because it's very intimidating for people. And so we had a situation where we had a relationship with a well-known leadership conference, and I had done some work for them, had been a full-time employee, and then had done some contracting work. And about this time, podcasting comes to me in the form of an article. I'm reading an article in Fast Company magazine or something like that. And we all had iPods back then. You know, we were listening to our music on iPods. And so this idea of podcasting, of putting out a broadcast, and people can download it off of iTunes and listen to it on demand. And it really grabbed me. And this is in the season where I'm just beginning to realize that I'm going to have to create my own opportunities and build my own platform if I'm going to get where I want to go, which is a national broadcaster. So I'm in my early 30s. And we talk about this in the book of the law of the zip code, which is in the place where you are. It's also this idea of making sure that you find everything around you. There he is. He's showing the
actually had that tabbed.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I did was I went to my friends and I said, hey, I think that Catalyst needs to be doing this podcast because I think it can grow the platform. You've got a great national base of people, and I think it can grow the influence in the brand by doing interviews. And I think I can do a good job with it. So they said, sure, let's do it. So we had a friend of a friend who had a kind of a video production company, was doing small movies and things. And so he had this house, this old house with a big room upstairs, and he had built a sound booth for voiceover work. And it was literally that 4x4 or 5x5, something like that. And it had a mic hanging down from the ceiling. And so me and the guy that we launched this thing, the very first couple of podcasts, we would stand in that room and face each other, you know, sharing the mic. And it was 150 degrees in that thing inside of about a minute. And, you know, we illustrate that story in the book, The Proximity Principle, because the law of the zip code says that everything you need to get started is already around you. Mm. So in that moment, Mark, had I thought, well, I've got three kids, a wife, a mortgage, a little puppy. I can't move to New York or LA. So I guess broadcasting just isn't in the cards for me. That's what a lot of people think. Then I would have never gotten out of the starting blocks. But the reality is I realized the law of the zip code long before I even said what it was and created it. And you can start where you are. And so that's the magic. It's actually not magical, but it seems magical. But the idea here is that if you look for opportunities to begin to do what you want to do where you are, or maybe it's just a learning process. Maybe it's just connecting with somebody locally that is in the field you want to be in. The point is, you can get started. Don't overlook the small itty bitty steps that you take to just get on the path, because they lead to other things. They create momentum. They give you that clarity and confidence that, yes, in fact, I do want to do this. Because here's the deal. If you'll do the small thing when nobody's looking and you're coming back to doing it, then you've got some confirmation in your heart that this is, in fact, something you're deeply passionate about. But if you're not willing to do the small things, then it's not high enough on your passion meter. And that's some good news, too. That's clarity to say, all right, this isn't my thing. But that's why it's important. That story is so powerful.
And you, you give so many good, like the zip code, you use an example, I think of like a movie producer, exactly that was thinking, I have to be in Hollywood to do this. And I forget, I don't remember if you lived in Tennessee or somewhere that you wouldn't have.
A guy in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he called the radio show. And right out of the gate, I said, you know, how can I help? And he said, well, I know exactly what I want to do, but I just don't know how to get there. I don't think it's possible. And so I said, what do you want to do? He said, well, I've always wanted to produce videos, you know, movies, television. I want to just create by producing or directing or both. And I just can't move to New York or LA. And so I just said to him, how many production companies do you think exist in Charlotte, North Carolina? And he chuckled because he knew that I had already changed his entire paradigm and his perspective. And he said, probably a couple dozen. I said, at least. And I said, what you need to do is begin to connect with those people. That's what the proximity principle is, by the way. It says, in order to do what you want to do. So in this guy's case, we're talking about producing and directing videos.
Yeah.
Do that. You got to be around people that are producing and directing videos. Then you got to be in places where that is happening. And so what we're doing is we're helping you folks as you think about what you want to do. And it seems like Mount Everest is absolutely impossible to scale. It's so big. It's so tall. There's so much involved. It takes so much time, so much cost, and it can be overwhelming to the point that you stay paralyzed.
Yeah.
What we've done with the proximity principle, Mark, is give people a real practical framework. If I get around the right people and I get in the right places, even, you know, even if they can't do everything for me, but they can just give me some advice. If I'm around the right people and in the right places where I can just observe and watch, around the right people and in the right places, opportunity comes to me. And that's what we all long for, is the opportunity to do the work that matters deeply to us. And so it's not so scary when you break it down to, okay, here are the people that are doing what I want to do. They're there. If I could fast forward my life today, I'd want to be doing what they're doing. And over here in these places, I know, again, whether that's a convention or it's a webinar or it's an actual place where you can go in and meet some of the people that you don't know, but you know the place exists.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, this guy did this. And so we got from him 6 or 8 weeks later, and he had gotten hired at one of those production companies and was thrilled out of his mind. So again, it really works. It's a practical and simple principle. It's going to take some time. Everybody's timeline is different. But if you practice, opportunity will find you.
Yeah, it works. I mean, and I like how you share your own story throughout it, as you're not just talking theories, you've lived it. And also then you really get deeper into not just being around the right people, but the taking it to a whole other level of actually building relationships. And there's one other key point in there too. You mentioned this before about your passion meter. A lot of the times you have to do this stuff for free. You have to do it. You're already working a 9 to 5. You have kids. I know from starting my own company, you're doing it in the other hours of the night. And if you're not really passionate about it, you're going to give up. You know, I imagine when you're playing an instrument, you know, you first start learning like do, re, mi, like, and it's so boring. But then when between that and the applause that people get at the recital, there's, you know, like Malcolm Gladwell says, that 10,000 hours behind the scenes. And that passion meter to everyone listening is really what I think, like, and you really break down in your book how to discover your passion and what that is for you, where your passion meets your talent. You give some amazing examples of that. But your passion meter, I know a lot of people had written me and they're like, but you don't understand, this is so hard. I've been doing it for 3 months and I'm not seeing the results. Mm-hmm. And so before getting to how you, your best advice to like taking those relate, like how you build those relationships, what do you say to someone that says something like that? Or maybe they're like, Ken, I've been doing my show for 2 years now, you know, in a warehouse in a 5x5 cubicle, and I'm not seeing any growth from it, but I'm really passionate about it. You know, what do you say to them? What do you say?
Well, it's a very good question. And so if you're pursuing something for a good while, I think for the person who's doing it for 3 months, I'd say hold tight a little bit. Let's relax and let's see. Let's get some benchmarks. Let's put some real measurables out over the next 3, 6, 9 months. And then when we get to that year mark, let's take an honest look at it. And so that's to the second part of your question. So let's say that they're 2 years in and they're very passionate about their podcast or they're passionate about their work, but they're not seeing any growth at all. I think you've got to retreat back to the formula that I teach on the Ken Coleman Show every day, and that is the sweet spot. And so let's look at what that is. The sweet spot is the intersection of what you do best and what you love to do most. So talent and passion. So passion is not enough. It's just simply not. You know, we have this society that you know, somewhere along the line, somebody came up with this and it sounded really good.
Yeah.
So everybody locked into it. And so we repeat it, but nobody's really thinking about it. And I hate to be, you know, the party pooper here, but this idea of you can do anything you want if you love doing it is absolutely not true.
Basketball,
but I could practice my whole life to try to dunk a basketball, but I don't have the physical talent, meaning I cannot jump on my own over 10 feet and put the ball in the basket. I can't. I physically can't. I could slap the backboard, but that's as high as I go. And so we need to understand, into the scenario of your question here, if you've been pursuing something that you're really passionate about and you've set some real benchmarks and the marketplace is telling you, we are not interested in what you're giving us, we've got to retreat back and say, is this in my sweet spot? Am I off a little bit? Mm-hmm. Do I have the talent, the skill to pull this off? And if I don't, I need to be okay with that. And the world's not coming to an end and I've not wasted a bunch of my time, but I've got to learn from this and I've got to retreat back and say, all right, I need to be self-aware. And if I'm not self-aware, I need to get around people who will tell me the absolute truth, whether it hurts my feelings or not.
Yeah.
Do I have the talent? Do I have the content to pull this off? And if you've been doing it for 2 years and you're not seeing any growth at all, I think you have to take a hard look at that. Now, again, you've given me a hypothetical, so that's the best way I can answer that.
But sure.
That's the process by which you would say, I may be trying to do something that I'm wildly passionate about, but I don't have the skill level to actually pull off. And at that point, we go, okay, let's do a shift here. And let's go back to the sweet spot example. Let's really do a self-assessment. Let's get super clear and be big boys and big girls. And make the adjustment, make the change. And then you're going to see great success and you'll see you'll see flow happen. And flow is a real thing. This has been determined by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, a Hungarian psychologist who studied this for 30 years. And in the sweet spot, you can experience that true flow where, again, you love what you're doing, but you're also super good at it. You see, so passion's not enough. And then on the flip side, Mark, talent's not enough.
Yes.
Calling my show every day.
Yeah.
I'll get in the studio and inevitably I'll have three or four men or women call in and they just, I'm stuck. I don't like my job. They're good at it, but there's no, so that's the answer to that scenario.
Yeah. Well, and you're not, like you said, I hope I'm not being a dad. This is all about being real, you know, that it's wisdom doesn't walk on eggshells. And that's what takes it to another level too, where you're of the relationships and you talk about it in your own book. And I've had it happen with someone who, when I was taking stuff to another level and started doing keynote speaking and getting paid for speaking. And I was immediately like, my good man, Eric Thomas, who I've had on my show, and other people that have, I have had some people where I just thought that, oh man, I'm so happy. I'm pumped up about this. I know everything about leadership. Like I'm ready to go. Let's do this. I guess I had a good mentor of mine, actually Bill, I can say his name. I know him well. He's been speaking for like 35 years and he's like, you're great. You're in the right spot. But he just tore me apart to where, but we have that relationship. So I respected it. And I'm a high D like you are. So I'm just like, get to it. And it did hurt. I was like, ouch. But he wasn't like, just give up and throw in the towel. He was like, if you get this better, like your potential is amazingly there and your passion's there without a doubt, but you have to grind on this area to perfect that talent. And so I was able to take that advice and apply it. And it 3 years later, you know, I had people that start to reach out and I'm getting way more and people just don't see that 3 years behind the scenes. And I just like to share that with everyone too, to understand that throughout this process that you're talking about and the proximity principle, where people really are, because you mentioned 70% of people are dissatisfied in their career, where people really are going after that next level of where their passion meets the talent, that they're going to go through that doubt and that fear and you're going to get ripped apart. And there's times like my good man, Dan Miller, who wrote the foreword to my book, says, if you do what you love, you'll never work another day for the rest of your life. And I get what he's saying, but also you're also going to have to work harder than you've ever worked in your life. And you'll have days where you're in tears. You know what I mean? And I like that you open up about a lot of that. And I think it's important that people understand that you have to be open to building those relationships where people will tell you that hard truth that you don't want to hear, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do people take it to another level of dialing in on their zip code? Now they're getting in locally. Like, how do they take it from a connection to a actual next level of a relationship?
Yeah. Well, what we talk about in the book, as you know, Mark, there's five specific people. These are archetypes, but there's five people: the professor, the producer, the professional, the peer, and the mentor. And then the five places are where you are. So that's the first place. Then a place to learn, a place to practice, a place to perform, and a place to grow. And so what we do is we walk the readers to those people and into those places so that you, A, know what they look like, the people, and what those places look like, and then what you're looking to do there. And so what I would tell you is that each one of those people are examples of the type of proximity that you are needing to actually practice. So I need to be around people like professionals who I may not be able to sit down with them, but I can watch them. I can watch their talks on TED. I can watch their YouTube talks, or I can read their books and listen to their podcasts, what have you. I can be a part of their webinars. Never meet them personally, but I can still learn from them because they're in the space that I want to be in and they're actually performing the role that I want to perform. The producers, there's people that I can get in contact with locally in my area because they're winning again in the role, in the space. And not only are they winning, but they're actually hiring people to work in that space. So that's a really important relationship because they're going to give you great insight if you get a chance to have coffee or lunch with them, tell you how they got where they are, give you a list of things that you need to do as it relates to getting qualified, tell you some other people they recommend that you need to connect with. They can point out some places, maybe make a connection or two in some places that you need to be in. But again, they're also somebody that hopefully you have such a good connection with them because you're humble, you're grateful, and you're hungry, meaning you show up and you're a human sponge and you're writing everything down that they tell you, that they have a positive interaction with you. If you do that, they will. They'll feel very valued. And they have the opportunity to remember you and maybe hire you, but you're not going into that meeting asking them to hire you. And then if we look at the professor, now this is not an actual professor at times, sometimes it is. Mm-hmm. But it's marked by a person who is actually well-versed in what you need to learn and do to be qualified to get in and start moving up the ladder. And then they also are somebody who is actively teaching them. So in my situation, you know the story in the book, we talk about a guy named Jeff Batten who had a broadcasting school. And I went in and joined a class with a bunch of 20-year-old dudes 3 weeks in before they even knew that I wasn't an instructor. And I, you know, humbled myself and took this class and learned a lot of basics that I still use today. But more importantly, got some great connections through that professor. And he made some really amazing early connections for me because I came in and I learned first. And then let's talk about the peer. The peer, this is very obvious, but these are the people you spend time with. Mm-hmm. And I think there's two types of peers that we break down in the book. One is your professional peer, and then we've got your personal peer. So that recreational area. So this is when you are choosing to spend time outside of the workplace with people. And you've got to be very careful who you spend time with.
Yeah,
we talk about making sure that you're very, very careful and selective to spend time with peers that are going to naturally push you by their own pace. Meaning if you were to take the metaphor of running and you're going jogging with a friend, you always want to go jogging, I think. Or if you're going to train for a race, you want to run with somebody who's a better runner than you.
Yeah.
Because in the training process, they're going to run faster and better than you. And so they're going to push you, meaning the pace they set pushes you to do more than you thought you could do. They're setting an example. They're modeling the way. You want a peer who lifts you, who, when you're down, when you're discouraged, you're facing fear and doubt, they're going to encourage you. And then you want someone who's going to hold you accountable. So if you share your dream, your vision with them, they're going to say, hey, how are you doing over there? You're not. I don't think you're doing what it takes. You said you wanted to do this. I don't see you doing this. That's that truth teller peer who won't have any kind of reservation. You talked about this a little bit earlier with that. And then, of course, the mentor. And you mentioned the mentor. It's a great example. This is someone who's older than you, someone who you respect tremendously. And they're going to give you some practical knowledge and then some very helpful wisdom on the journey. They also hold you accountable and encourage you and equip you on the way. So that's an example of the five people in the book. And the reason that I wrote it that way, that to give you an example as a reader of the archetypes, is these are the people that you've got to get around. And when you do it, opportunity will happen. Good things are going to happen. You're getting the opportunity to learn. And you're getting the opportunity to do because you're making these connections. And then those connections lead to other connections. So if you're sitting there going, well, what do I do with this proximity principle? Well, you actually have to use it and you have to actually get in proximity. This is an action that should turn into a habit.
Yeah.
And when you do that, let me just tell you something. Moving up the ladder, whatever ladder that it is that you want to move up in the career or the space you want to be in, progress is never going to be an issue because this will always position you and propel you. That's what proximity does.
Yeah, yeah. And something else too, can you get around these people too? And also it's contagious. Like the next level becomes the new normal. You're like, all of a sudden, everyone around me wasn't just business owners and leaderships, but every one of them had best-selling books out. So when I wrote my book and finally got that out there, it was kind of just like, I mean, they were applauding me, they were encouraging me, but it was almost like once it happened, it didn't seem so abnormal to me. It was kind of like, yeah, that's supposed to be the next step. Mm-hmm. But my mindset like literally wouldn't have been able to even comprehend that 5 years earlier. And I'm just letting everyone know, I'm sharing my stuff, but I mean, this is proof that what you share in the proximity principle literally works. As I continue to build relationships and keep going and growing out of my comfort zone, these people push me, so sometimes without even having to tell you, just by seeing what they're doing. Uh-huh. Almost makes you realize, like, just seeing that it's real, that wow, that's the human being like Ken and I are, and they're doing it. And they have, you know, they have flaws like the rest of us. They go through fear, they go through doubt, but they're doing it. And seeing that like humanity part of it sometimes would even encourage me more, probably without them even knowing that they were encouraging me. And that's all by being in proximity with different people. And you lead people now, like your amazingly successful show, and then you get hired to host Entree Leadership. Now, what I have to ask you about this is, talk about being in proximity. Dave Ramsey and the team there, as I mentioned earlier, has taught me so much, like just been a game changer for our culture and our company. What was it that you getting in that proximity that challenged you to really grow? Like, what have you seen there that maybe, I know you shared some struggles in your book of where you almost had to slow down a little bit when you were getting on, I believe it was Entree Leadership, and you were wanting to see more progress quicker than it was coming. There was a part of that. I'm trying to round this out here into a question that you can actually answer.
Well, I think it's an example of Ramsey Solutions is an example of one of the five places that I mentioned, and that's a place to grow. So I had done my time, you know, I'd started where I was, you know, that's the first place. And then I talked about the broadcasting school, and there were multiple other places that I put myself in where I was learning essentially. And then I got into some small gigs, you know, doing high school football on the internet, you know, doing some small local TV stuff, hosting small events. And that was a place to practice. You know, this is a low risk situation where you get in and you're not being paid a bunch of money. You may not be paid at all. You mentioned volunteering early on, and that's really important. The idea here is this isn't a high pressure performance. So we call it a place to practice. And that's what we're looking at. Where, you know, look, livelihood doesn't depend on it. We know we're not going to be very good because it's early on. You know, our first time that we do something is usually the worst. At least it should be if you're continuing to grow and develop. And then we move into a place to perform. And so now that's where I started my own radio show back in Atlanta. And I was, you know, paying myself for that time. And then I eventually got on Monday through Friday and the radio station was paying me. But we've got a live show every day, 5 to 7. People are listening. So this is a place to perform. We've got real pressure here. If you don't do a good job, you're done. They're going to kick you out. And so then a place to grow is the final place. And that's where now we're moving along in our career and we're in, and we want to always be looking for a place where we can get in and it has a ladder. And so Ramsey Solutions was that place for me. So I let the Ken Coleman Show go, left it in Atlanta. I came to Nashville. I took on a support role in a sense, even though I was platformed as host of the Entree Leadership Program, the Dave Ramsey video channel, and host of all the Ramsey live events. I wasn't doing any speaking for 2 years. I didn't do a talk at all.
I didn't know that.
The only content that I would contribute would be on the Entree Leadership podcast. But even then, I'm platforming somebody else and I'm lifting them and pulling information out of them for the audience. So essentially, I took a back seat on a rocket ship. But understand, I still took a seat on a rocket ship.
Yes.
That's what I want people to hear. I did, again, I died to self a little bit. Kind of put my personal vision and goals on the back burner. But again, I was still on the stove. You know, I was still on that rocket ship. And that's important for people. But it's important to know that I did it strategically. It's not just a bunch of humility and I'm praising myself for that humility. It was strategic humility.
Yeah.
And so what I did was, so I got into a situation that I knew that if I did a great job, and I did what I was expected to do, and I did a better job than that. And I was humble. I just believed that I would be able to move seats and eventually get in the right seat for me. And that's exactly what happened. You know, 3.5 years later, I become a Ramsey personality. We begin to you know, I'm now beginning to kind of allow that content that's been bubbling inside of me for years to come out. And before you know it, we got a national show on Sirius XM. And, you know, a year and a half later, we greenlight the book, The Proximity Principle, which came to me on a car ride, you know, into the office one day based out of my life.
I love it.
Write it. It comes out. It's a bestseller. Now we syndicate the show. And it feels to somebody on the outside looking in, wow, just all these great things are coming to fruition. Isn't
that overnight success, right?
It's not overnight.
You know? I know.
About 9 years talking, yes. You know, a real journey. And to summarize, you know, that idea here is that I put myself in a place where there was a ladder. Mm. Dave Ramsey allowed me to climb the ladder. But had I not come to Ramsey Solutions, none of this would be happening. So it's really important to understand how the ladder works, and we've got to have a ladder. And if I'm in a place where there's no opportunity to grow, that's okay. We're going to take all that experience, but we've hit a lid. So now we need to move into places where I can grow. And that's really, really important. So there's the distinction between the rest of the places. And what you're talking about is the place to grow.
Well, at the core of this, and what I love about this whole book is you really get in depth. This really comes down to the different levels. And for each new level, like you said, of that rocket ship, you're at a whole new level when you got on there, but you're starting off with then there's a whole other level of pros. So you're almost starting off as an amateur again. It can feel like it because you've intentionally surrounded yourself with people that are at a whole new level, and there's always another level.
Right.
And well, that's where so many people get stuck.
That's right. It's scary. People get stuck because they're scared of this. But as you put yourself in new places for growth, you will grow to that opportunity. And so you have to understand that without progress, without challenge and change, there is no progress. You're going to have to change, and you're going to have to face new challenges, and that's what gives you progress. There's just no progress otherwise.
Yeah.
And that's part of the deal. As I say around here all the time, our team's sick of me saying it, it's the price of admission. Anytime somebody says to me, wow, are you tired? You know, are you exhausted? You know, or whatever, or hey, your schedule's crazy right now. I kind of say this to myself so I don't get a bad attitude, because this is everything that I asked for. And the reality is I'm still in a growth pattern.
Yeah.
Going to continue to grow everything that I'm doing. The mission is what I'm about. I'm about the mission.
Yeah.
Because of the mission, there's all these things that come with the mission. Okay. So that's the price of admission. And so you just got to understand there's going to be changes and there's going to be challenges. And if you get that, then we're going to go in with a great attitude and say, hey, this is a change thing. Oh, you know, it's not great. Or, hey, I'm tired. Or things are a little crazy right now. That's part of the change. Or that's part of the challenge. And so when we accept that, what will happen is we will adapt. The human mind, the human spirit is so adaptable. And so we adapt and we grow.
Yeah, we adapt and we grow. And you got to go through that pruning at each new level to really blossom at a bigger level. And it hurts to get pruned, and it's scary, like you said. And also in your book, you mentioned, because I know so many of my listeners, and that's always what I'm all about, is I battled fear and doubt my whole life and continue to overcome it. And I like to always help people know that they can too. And you talked about as you were going through this, because I know what it's like to be driven, and you're like, I want to see that. This should be happening in 3 months, 6 months. It's not happening yet. And you can just get stuck within that moment. And you helped say, it was actually, I believe, your wife that helped you put it into perspective. And I tell people, and I'm speaking to myself too, I can look at a snapshot of like the past month or 3 months as everything. Huh? But it takes stepping back and being like, if you really look like a year over the whole year or even 2 years, where you were, I know this personally helps me, and how far you've actually come.
That's right.
You've come a lot further than you're realizing, like in this moment of madness.
Yeah.
So what would you suggest, Ken? I mean, you've been around and interviewed like the best of the best, literally at all levels. What are like some of the main things that you would suggest that helps people, that has helped you when you're struggling, like in your biggest moment of doubt? and fear and just really feeling like this isn't going the way that I thought it was going to go. When they are in the right spot, like you said, you were on that rocket ship, but you know what it's like to just have those days where you're just freaking beat down and you come home and you're just like, I don't know if I can do it anymore, you know?
Well, I think the advice is simple. I think you have to remember what the mission is about. What's the vision, the ultimate goal? Why are you doing all this? What's Mount Everest? What's the tip of that look like? And why are we climbing? And it's retreating to that, and that's good perspective. And so after we kind of clarify our perspective, our why is what you hear many people say, is let's re-clarify the why. And then let's also be very, very honest and bold about the lies that we're facing. So fear and doubt, whatever the voice is, whatever the message is, those are lies. But you have to own them. And you have to, you know, I make callers on my show tell me what their fear is. I make them say it out loud. And the reason I do that is because I want them to identify the lie. And so when we hear it out loud, it doesn't have as much power. It's amazing.
Yeah, I like that.
When they say it to me, they feel a little silly, but we're not shaming anybody. But I want them to feel the silliness of it.
Yeah.
And yet when it stays in here and it rattles around in our brain, it eventually seeps into our heart and it becomes an absolute truth.
Yes.
We've got to own the lie. Let's call it what it is. And then let's look at this. If it's a lie, then what's the converse? What's the other side of that? So if this is a lie, then what's the true statement? And so whatever it is. So if you say, hey, I don't have what it takes, that's a doubt that everybody has. I mean, everybody deals with that. And I still deal with that at times.
Yes.
Well, then I'm going to own that and say, is that really true? Or do I not have the talent to do it? Do I have the raw talent or skill that I can rise to that occasion? If I do what I need to do, can I actually do this? Do I belong in this space? And the answer is always yes. So what we've done is we've exposed the lie and now we've got the truth. And I would also say that after you do those two things, this is a conversation you have to have with yourself. After that, you need to also, let's solidify that. Let's put that in concrete by going and talking to somebody, one of those five people. You know, that mentor is probably the perfect person there, or certainly a close peer who's a truth teller. And I've got that. I've got an older gentleman who's a world-renowned business coach, coaches CEOs, some of the top CEOs in the country. Nobody knows his name. In fact, I don't even know if McKinsey next to me even knows who he is. He goes to my church. I meet with him once every 6 to 8 weeks. He's a guy that I can call instantly or text him and say, I'm feeling this right now. And then he's going to hop on the phone and we're going to fix it. My best friend, who's a world-class businessman, he's a guy I can call and say, man, I'm feeling this. And I'll tell him and he'll just pound me. You know, he'll go, that is so stupid. Like, that's crazy. You know, sometimes he'll walk away from me, just literally go, dude, that's ridiculous. And I'm not kidding.
You think of like David Goggins.
Well, but he's done that to me. Because what he's doing there is he's going, that is so ridiculous that I'm not even entertaining it. I don't even need to talk you through that. And essentially what happens is I go like this. And it's like, oh gosh, you know, that was really stupid. And so I'm being very vulnerable in telling you that because I think it's important.
No, I appreciate it.
That they don't look at somebody like me and go, oh, he's got, you know, listen, we all have this brain and we cannot control the thoughts that come into our mind. I want to make sure people understand this. None of us can control the thoughts that come into our mind. Nobody. But we can control what we do with the thought. You know, so if I have some crazy violent thought, and I'm like, what in the world was that? You know, let's
y'all get it.
Oh, let's get rid of that. I'm a civil human being. I love people. I'm not gonna do, you know, or whatever it is, or some crazy, you know, whatever. And so you've got to understand that the things that come in your mind, you don't need to feel any guilt over, you don't need to be weighed down over this thought. But we do need to know what the thought is. Let's own it. Let's call it out. That's a stupid, crazy, just nut thought. Let's get that out. It's garbage. So that's what you would do. That's what you would do in that situation. And when you do that right there, there's no way a limiting belief is going to stay in your head and seep into your heart.
And I appreciate everything about you being vulnerable and open up. And opening up can, because it doesn't help anyone to sit here and just be like, I've made it to this whole new level and I don't struggle with fear. I don't still struggle with doubt. It's part of the process. And what you continue to share too is everyone else you know that has made it to other levels, they go through those same battles in their mindset. Like you said, those thoughts come. It can be the craziest ones, and we can't control what comes, but we can control if we sit there and dwell on it and overthink on it and stay up all night trying to problem solve and save the whole world in one night, which I've done before. You're just more tired the next day. And it brings it back to the importance of these relationships that you build and the proximity principle. Part of it, you know, like it builds that self-awareness muscle for your whole mindset to even be aware like these thoughts aren't real, and learning how to let them go, as my friend Bill would say, like a helium balloon. That's what he continued to teach me. Just like, don't give him any airplay. Just imagine the thought is like a helium balloon. Just let it go. But also they tell you, I've been through that too. I've learned to overcome it. And then you have some people that can just call you out. Like you said, your one friend that's just like, and that's ridiculous. I don't want to hear this nonsense. And like you said, it like snaps you out of it, because people can get so caught up. And I've been there too, where you're just like so within yourself. And it's almost like someone's slapping you across the face, just like, wake up, snap out of it. And it helps you to be like, okay, yeah, that's true. I I'm out of my head now, and I can just keep going. And I think that's it. I love when I have amazing guests like you, that just NFL players, everyone that just share, they go through these same doubts and fears like everyone else. And that's literally part of the process. It's part of the price that you say that you get courageous along the way by doing it through the fear. Mm-hmm. So as we're getting close to wrapping up, Ken, I just want to ask you too, speaking of fear and doubt, I wasn't actually there. I think I heard you talk about it. You interviewed, and I always butcher her name, Condoleezza Rice, which, and George Bush Jr. on stage. Were you facing a lot of fear and doubt like the night before that? And what is actually, no, let me, you already answered that before. What is one of the main correlations you've seen of all these people you've been around? Dave Ramsey, Condoleezza Rice, George Bush Jr., John Maxwell. I mean, I could go on and on from John Gordon, Patrick Lencioni, who wrote on the back of your book. I love him. I love everything he does. What would you say is like one of the main correlations that all these people do have in common? Yeah. That really are these high achievers?
It's very easy. They're lifelong learners. Mm. It's the one, there's many common threads that a lot of great men and women share, but that would be the one that would be at the top of the list. They're very successful, but they continue to learn. They don't go on autopilot. You know, they're just always looking for people to connect with, you know, that challenge them and that can add value to their mission. And they're just learning all the time. They just never stop. They don't put that antenna down, if you will. And, you know, it's interesting. This is such a huge issue for me. I did some research for my first book, One Question, and we found a study from the University of Michigan that said that the average toddler asks somewhere between 300 to 400 questions a day. It's just insane. And they're just asking tons, thousands of questions over the course of a week, you know, in a month. And then when we get to about the eighth grade, the average American's asking 1 to 2 questions a day. And that's a travesty. And what's happening is that our society and culture is beating curiosity out of people. Mm. And then if you juxtapose that reality with men and women that you're talking about, that I've had the opportunity to get to know and interview myself, They're epically curious. I mean, they don't ever stop learning. So that would be a really important attribute that those successful men and women share.
I love that. I love that. And thank you so much for your time, Ken. Yeah, this has been amazing. Look, everyone, I'm holding up on camera. We'll have everything in the show notes. I've already had several guests write me about this show. Some have already purchased it. They asked me some questions. I'm like, you just got to get his book. I was about to answer it, and I'm like, wait, it's in his book. So one listener, Brock, actually, shout out to you, grabbed it on Audible already. He's one of those lifelong learners that you're talking about. And the proximity principle, the proven strategy that will lead to the career you love. Of course, we'll have everything in the show notes. And I can't think of a better way to end it than what Ken said. I usually say never settle, keep elevating beyond, but stay epically curious. I love it. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thanks, Mark.
This is Julie.
Hey, calendar, what's my morning like?
Julie's about to have a long day.
At 9 a.m., soccer carpool. 9:10, purchase birthday card. 9:05, dry cleaning.
Did you just go backwards?
I'm sorry, I can't fit that question into your schedule. 9:15, cry for a little bit.
For days that won't end, let Schwann's help. With Schwann's, you can get delicious meals that go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. Visit today at schwanns.com. After a long day of being pulled in every direction, the last thing anyone wants to think about is what's for dinner. That's where Schwann's can help, with a variety of real food choices, frozen to lock in freshness, from ready-made meals, premium meats and side dishes, to vegetables, ice cream, and more. Schwann's foods go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours, so you can pull off a delicious meal in no time at all. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. To help simplify mealtime, visit schwanns.com.